We are going to actually have Edgar come up in a second and talk a little bit about DPR and the conversation that they've been having with CARB and an update on the environmental monitoring. And then we're going to go a little in depth with a really fun community air monitoring plan exercise, which the Air District will explain in a minute, but it explains these super fun dots that are in front of you. So make sure that you, everybody has a set of dots. After that, we're going to go over the SERP and talk a little bit about the changes that have been made in response to the comments that have come in, and then cover some next steps and dates that are coming up. So any questions about what we're going to do tonight? All right, we're going to start with Edgar.
All right. Hello, everybody. My name is Edgar Vidrio. I am from the California Department of Pesticide Regulation. And today I'm going to be very brief. Hopefully all of you guys have a one-sheet document that is titled Ambient Air Monitoring of Pesticides in the Shafter Community. Essentially, as it was mentioned, DPR is having conversations with the California Air Resources Board and the Air Districts regarding the expansion of possible air monitoring activities in the Shafter area. As was proposed, I believe, a few weeks ago in a document that was created by the steering committee, there was a few monitoring opportunities or monitoring locations that were proposed. So DPR, again, working with the CARB and the Air Districts, is proposing multiple expansion options to the pesticide monitoring that we do in town. This is obviously depending on the identification of additional resources and funding that is needed to expand the air monitoring for pesticides. So essentially, the table that's listed here has a total of 7 options. I want to emphasize that the options are not exhaustive. If there's additional options that the committee would like to propose, by all means, go ahead. This is just to get the conversation started. We have option 1, which is basically an expansion of 3 additional pesticide air monitoring sites, just like what we have in Sequoia Elementary. This is monitoring for over 36 pesticides on a weekly basis, year long. So it'll be the same thing just at 3 other locations. The locations will be possibly selected today as part of the air monitoring exercise. We don't have any specific place in mind as of yet. We're waiting for the community to let us know where those locations may be, again, providing that there's additional resources for this effort. Option 2, it's if you're only interested on specific pesticides, whether they're fumigants or organophosphates, the monitoring could be more centralized, more targeted, essentially. So if fumigant monitoring is requested as opposed to the 36 pesticides that we're currently monitoring, that's also an option as well. Option 3 only talks about 1,3-D, 1,3-dichloropropane. If that's what's only interested, we can expand the monitoring as well. And then we have, chlorpyrifos monitoring as well. Option 5 and 6 are, so in addition to monitoring for 36 pesticides or one pesticide on a weekly basis, DPR routinely does what we call seasonal monitoring. These are intensive monitoring events where we look for anywhere from one pesticide to a couple pesticides, maybe up to 5 or 6 or 10, depending on what we're looking at. And we do monitoring on a 4-day basis every week for a period of 12 weeks to try to get the maximum use period for those pesticides of interest. That's also an option there. And actually, we can do up to 31 if the multi-residue screen is chosen. And lastly, there's been a lot of interest in expanding the monitoring or enhancing the monitoring in regards to how we actually collect samples. As I mentioned before, there currently is no real-time pesticide air monitoring that is at the level that we can use it for the regulatory monitoring that we do. There's some monitoring right now where you get very high concentrations of fumigants or a very other handful of pesticides. There's an option there that we can actually contract with either a university researcher or some other entities where they can look into additional or new creative pesticide air monitoring equipment or analytical process that will make it easier, obviously not now, but in the near future, to deploy real-time monitoring. And again, that's more of a long-term, so that's why we had it as a research add-on. Again, depending on the funding, we can have one option or two options and then add that as well to make sure that we're kind of future-proofing our monitoring efforts. With that, if you have any questions, I can try to address those now. Also, I believe you guys are going to have an exercise in a few minutes, so I could also make myself available and answer any questions that you have at that time.
Okay. Thanks, Edgar. Before we move on, I just wanted to point out we do have an ag commissioner in the room. Can you wave your hands? Thank you. And the California Air Resources Board is also in the room. Can I get you guys to say hi? So those are your ag commissioner and CARB resources. Next, we're going to turn it over to Jessica. John.
All right. Good evening, everybody. John Klassen with the Air District, and we're going to kick off the next part of our meeting tonight talking about air monitoring and the group exercise and discussion that we're going to go through together. So we talked about air monitoring. Let me get the clicker here. We talked about air monitoring a few times last spring, going back a few months. Went through that exercise, got some initial feedback. We published our draft air monitoring plan for the community of Shafter. We got some feedback from the committee that they wanted some more discussion on air monitoring with the whole committee to get everybody's thoughts on this. So that's why we're here today, to come back and go through an exercise with everybody to make sure we get thoughts from everybody on the committee on what they think about air monitoring, where we should do air monitoring, what we should be measuring. We're going to go through an exercise at the tables here, and then we have a map over here where Jessica is, where you can use your stickers to vote on what your preferences are on where we do monitoring, just to give you a preview of where we're going. So this is really going to help provide the foundation of the air monitoring and what we're going to be doing here in Shafter. So this slide here just shows what monitoring we already have in place in Shafter. So we have the Shafter DMV site that's been there a long time. We have ozone and NOx and VOC being measured there. We started measuring PM2.5 there a few months ago as a part of this process. And we now have PM10 operating there. We do have an instrument on site there. It's now operating, collecting data. And we're working on communications with that site to be able to see that data in real time. So that's currently being developed. We have a real-time PM2.5 instrument at the Shafter Grimway Academy school that's operating right now. And then at Sequoia Elementary School, we have pesticides being monitored by DPR, as you know. And so the ongoing monitoring that's currently at these sites is going to help provide a valuable data set alongside the rest of what we develop for the Community Air Monitoring Network in Shafter. And fixed sites like the Shafter DMV site that's been there a long time, this is a part of our regulatory air monitoring network, and these are more immobile structures, permanently installed. It's very difficult to move these sorts of things. But everything else we're going to be implementing here in Shafter are more mobile. We can move things around as we need to and take measurements in different areas as we need to. So this map here, it may be a little hard to see. This is just showing where the current air monitoring is in Shafter. We have the DMV site right in the center of town, where we have PM2.5 and ozone and NOx and VOC and now PM10. Up on the right, top right-hand side, there's our pesticide monitoring site at Sequoia Elementary that DPR is operating. Then on the bottom left, we have the Grimway Academy PM2.5 monitor that's currently operating. This next slide here, this image is showing what we are planning currently to move forward to keep expanding this. This is kind of based on some of the feedback we've already gotten from the steering committee here on what their interests are and doing some more monitoring. So at Sequoia Elementary School, where the pesticide monitoring is happening, we are proposing to put our multi-pollutant air monitoring system there, which can measure ozone and NOx and VOC and PM2.5, a number of things to take measurements up there. Then at Golden Oak Elementary School, there are some recommendations that there's a concern about diesel particulate matter, so we are planning to put a PM2.5 instrument there at Golden Oak to address that. So this is currently in the works. And just as a reminder, when we go through this exercise here, as you have in front of you, as you see in the map over on the side over here, we can think about the entire area, not just the boundary of Shafter, but the 7-mile radius, this area of interest, looking at all these areas about where we could place monitoring and think about this together. And just remember that resources are limited to cover this very expansive area. So we need to be thoughtful about the recommendations that we make. As we said a few months ago when we went over this, we need to make sure the monitoring we put in place is in a secure location to make sure it's okay, has access to power. We get the okay from the landowners. So think about that as you think about these more remote areas of where we can place things. And before you go into the exercise, just to note, we have the air monitoring trailer. We still need to place somewhere in the area. We strongly recommend that does get placed in the urban area where we can get a secure location and access to power. It's where the majority of residents are living in the Shafter area, so that'd be nice to have that somewhere there. PM 2.5 would be good to place somewhere in the more populated area. But the air monitoring van is a great resource that we can use to take samples of air measurements all around the 7-mile radius. So think about that as you go through the exercise on where you think the van could be used to take measurements in areas of interest and where the trailer and the PM2.5 instrument can go in the more populated area. That's what we recommend to you. We've seen this before, but just a brief overview. You have this in your packet just showing what we're able to measure with the different assets we have. We have one air monitoring trailer, one compact multi-pollutant air monitoring system. We have four standalone PM2.5 instruments for the whole network. And then we have our van, which can go out and take measurements of a number of things throughout the area. We will really have the same abilities with these assets that we do with a regulatory station that we have in the network. This is going to be high-precision regulatory-grade equipment. Many of these instruments are the exact same model that we use at our regulatory stations, very accurate. So that the data we collect is going to be the best that it can be. But this is going to be much more mobile. We'll be able to move things around more easily. All right, we're good. We'll be able to move the van around easily, of course, move the trailer around as needed. So as we look at the recommendations we have through this exercise, whatever the number one priority is, we'll do our best to get monitoring there. Whatever the second priority is, that can be the next place we move it to as we change things around with our community network. And beyond the normal routine measurements that we take in our fixed air monitoring network for regulatory reasons, we're going to be able to do a lot of different types of measurements, being able to do PM and VOC speciation, measuring black carbon and H2S, so that'll be nice to be able to do these different things. And the air monitoring trailer, of course, will be the most expansive capabilities to be able to measure a lot of different things. You have this in your packet, too, just showing the different resources we have, the pollutants they're able to measure, and what the example sources that pollutant comes from. So you have this for your reference as we go through the exercise. And actually, I'm going to hand it over to Jess Olson, who's going to walk you through what the resources you have in front of you. We have a separate presentation for that. Yeah, we'll pull that up here in a minute. She'll walk you through all the exercises and the materials you have in front of you. Real quick before we jump on that. So the exercise itself, you'll have some time at your tables to discuss what you have in front of you, what's important to you for monitoring. You can have some time to go through the worksheet yourself to make your recommendations of what you think is important for monitoring. Once you have that done, you can each take your stickers, place them on the map over here, and Jessica will explain it again. Once we have that, then we can have a nice visual picture of what the full committee is recommending for air monitoring here in Shafter.
Okay. Tom's got a quick question, and then we'll go back to Jessica.
Yeah. So you put a monitor at Grimway Academy. Did that come from the committee? It wasn't. I haven't heard it mentioned.
Yeah, we did mention it maybe a couple months ago when we first put it in. And that came from the initial network map that we established a few months ago where we showed that to the committee. We got some feedback. Everybody seemed to think it was okay to move forward with that network design. So we went ahead and worked with Grimway Academy to get that monitor established.
Yeah, I don't think that's the best choice. I'm not sure how you came to that conclusion. I know it's an easy place to put a monitor, but something upwind might be a lot better, upwind of Shafter.
Well, Tom, you're previewing exactly why we're doing this exercise. So Jessica's going to explain in a sec, but we're going to ask all the steering committee members to please put dots after we go through this with the instructions. And if you're a member of the public, Jessica will cover this as well, but we will give you the opportunity to also make notes on the sheet about your thoughts on where things should go as well. But that's the reason to have this conversation, Gustavo.
Yeah, thank you. On the page, I do believe it was the previous page or two pages behind where it has like the air marching trailer, compact, standalone. How much of the compact, like kind of multimedia monitoring systems are available in for this 7 mile radius?
You mean how many? How many trailers? How many compact systems?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Like, I think that's in the your packet has that, but yeah, okay. Just to clarify again, we have one trailer for Shafter. We have one compact system. We have four PM2.5 instruments, and then we have the one air monitoring van. And then we have, PM10 at the Shafter DMV site. Yep.
Thank you.
Thanks. So they have to be, most of them have to be placed, or the permanent ones have to be placed where the infrastructure's there. You can plug them in and have access to them. Do they have to be on public property, or if a private person says, hey, you can use my backyard, that's okay?
I mean, we prefer public property, but if there's a private landowner who's willing to work with us and it's a secure place that we're comfortable with, yeah, that could be an option.
Okay,
so keep that in mind, yeah.
Okay, any other questions before we jump forward? Okay, Jessica.
All right. Well, a lot of those are great questions, and a lot of questions, hopefully some more questions will get answered as I go through this. But throughout this, keep in mind, if you can, because it'll help all of us, when you do decide a region that you think is best for monitoring, if you also want to, on the sheet, and I'll go over what your sheet is in a second, or even verbally suggest an exact location within that region to place the monitor that you're suggesting, that would help us a lot. Because I'll tell you right now, one of the reasons, of course, that we're coming back to this is based on steering committee input. But second is, we actually, if you recall our original boundary design, we had a trailer in one specific location in the PM2.5. The place where we wanted to put that trailer, we've talked to a number of people already in that region, and it's really difficult to get someone to agree to have this large air monitoring piece of equipment with power and all these other capabilities and security that we want. So it does take, I think, a lot of us to kind of come up and be creative where we can place these things. So that's a lot of the reason we need your input here as well. So please keep that in mind. Okay, so I'm going to go through your packet, and this is just going to be a quick overview of what you have available as sort of a resource as we move forward. So I don't expect you to be able, thank you. Cool, to be able to read this because it's in your packet, but I just wanted to use it as sort of a visual as we go through. Let me take this. So the first page you have, and it should say page 1 of 12, and for the public, we didn't print a ton of these, but we do have them spread out on the table over here where John is, so when we break to go talk about it, come take a look. So this is a summary of what John just mentioned, and above you can see how many of each system we have, and right now it actually says 3 for PM2.5. We've added another one to the community available to you, so that will actually be 4 is how many total the community of Shafter will have, at least in this round of implementation of the camp. Down below, it's a little glossary of terms. So even though we've talked about it a bunch, if you're trying to remember what black carbon is or where it comes from, because maybe you're deciding, well, why would I want to put a black carbon monitor here or there? That, for example, is primarily from diesel particulate matter. So think of highways and freeways and busy roadways when you go to that. And then down below is, again, a summary of what John just mentioned, the current and planned air monitoring sites. The current ones being the Shafter DMV and Grimway Academy, as well as Sequoia Elementary for the DPR pesticide sites. The planned being Sequoia Elementary for the compact system and Golden Oak for the PM2.5, which, again, was planned. It was also input from the steering committee that submitted the letter that also wrote out those two areas. But think about it. If for some reason none of those, as Tom mentioned, are what the committee wants, we can also use our voting today to guide maybe where we can move even planned monitors. So keep that in mind.
Jessica, can you touch on the pesticide real quick?
Yes. So I was going to get there too. But so pesticide monitoring, when we go to vote, and I'll go over this in the next page, but based on what you just heard Edgar say, we would also like your feedback on where they could, depending on which option the committee decides on. You notice that all of those options included expanded pesticide monitoring, and we want to give them a lot of feedback on where that expanded pesticide monitoring can be. So that will be one of the stickers that we will go through and place. And so this is just the capabilities. The grayed out systems are where we've already placed them. But again, if you have a different idea, we have, and I'll go over this in a second too, the availability for you to also give us alternative options. So maybe this works. There we go. All right, so this is our worksheet, and this is the worksheet that the public has as well. And the idea here, as you'll see on all of the subsequent maps, including the map up here, is we've tried to divide the very large community boundary, including the 7-mile radius, into zones. And we kind of broke the zones up by area type. So you'll notice small little communities where Cherokee Strip and Mexican Colony are sort of in one smaller zone. The densely populated center of Shafter is broken up into four zones. All of these zones are labeled A through O, and that's what this is. This is your worksheet based on all of the subsequent maps and your understanding of the area, where we would like you to select, based on the number across the top, where you would like to prioritize placing that type of monitor. So, for example, the full-size trailer, and you can see in the capabilities of that trailer in the worksheet before, where do you want to prioritize it? Maybe you want to prioritize it, as John suggested, in one of the populated areas, which is really kind of A through F. But if you have other ideas, keep in mind we need to make sure we know where to plug it in. Is it secure? Is it a location we can access? So if you do suggest one of the more rural areas for really any of this, make sure to please write down where you think it specifically could go in that area, or help give us suggestions on who to contact, because that's going to be the biggest bang for our buck. As we go across, you'll notice it says select 5, select 2, and it says pesticides. At the time, we didn't know how many. All of these are the number of stickers that you have, and it was very planned this way. Because once you decide here, and again, I'll go through the maps really quickly on how we'll help you decide, you will then have an opportunity to go place that many stickers per color up on the map, and we will have a really nice, I think, visual representation of sort of where the committee landed. We do expect sort of a range. I'm sure some people will suggest more areas than others, but the idea is that whichever area gets the most per color will be like the committee's collective suggestion for where we place the monitor. And that will, all of this, there'll be a picture of it. We'll collect all of your worksheets, and we'll even collect public worksheets. And this will be the record within the community air monitoring plan of this is how we came to this conclusion. And so that was a lot of the feedback too. We wanted a really visual consensus of where we came to. So that's what this worksheet is. This is important. We want everyone to fill it out, including public, if you would like. And how we'll fill that out is through this. So you'll see page 3 is just a zoomed in version, because it's hard to see the area is so big on these small pieces of paper. So it's just a zoomed in version of where we currently have monitoring. And I'll go, we'll all be around to answer questions, by the way. I'm just going to quickly give you a chance to take a look at these, and then I'll set you off. Page 4 is just a zoomed out version, so same thing. And this actually includes a windrows. And what that means is it includes, and this is kind of an opposite of some people who use windrows a lot might notice, this is actually kind of the opposite of what some people might think is a windrows, but this is actually pointing the direction the wind is flowing typically on like a typical day. And we've gone over this in previous meetings here, but I just wanted to iterate that typically just the best way to read this is that on an average day in Shafter, the wind flows up from this direction down to this direction. So as we think about where we want to place upwind and downwind monitors, as Tom just suggested, think of this as stuff is coming into here, and anything from here would typically be flowing in this direction, if that makes sense. And we can help answer that question as we keep moving forward. So that's what that map is. This is a map of sensitive receptors. So this is going to be public schools, private schools, medical adult care centers, and medical facilities. So just, again, you'll see the legend here. Obviously, a lot are concentrated in the city center, but there's a school here. I think this is Maple Elementary School. There are a couple of schools down here, a couple of medical facilities out here in this rural boundary. So keep that in mind. A lot of places like that tend to be really easy for us to place monitoring. And it ends up being a really good thing because you're monitoring at the sensitive receptor. So keep that in mind. If N is a very a location that you're really interested in monitoring, we can really think about this school as our resource. Now we have emissions maps. So what we've done is we've broken up by grid cell all of the emissions from all the different sources for four different pollutants. The first is for diesel PM. So again, we'll come around and answer questions, but the darker the color, the more diesel PM, the lighter the color, the less. You can kind of start to see an outline of this is 99. These are sort of the major highways coming into town. So kind of keep that in mind when we're talking about monitoring for diesel PM. This is NOx emissions. So similarly, we think of that typically a lot of the times as something coming from mobile sources. So again, this is just for your reference. When it comes to placing monitors, we might want to monitor places where we think there's the most pollution impacting the community. PM 2.5 emissions is your next one. VOC emissions are your next one. We have the capabilities to monitor all of these, so keep that in mind again. And we wanted to also kind of place an emphasis, and this has come up in both committees. We wanted to make sure we emphasize this is all about public health. So this map isn't necessarily a one-to-one comparison of pollution from air pollution to public health in the area, but it is a good resource to kind of take a look at and really keep in mind. So this is the Cal Enviro screen, which is a measure based on a few years back on asthma percentile within the Shafter boundary. So just sort of as a resource again. And we did it for three different health indicators that are typically associated with air pollution. We did it for cardiovascular disease. So that's sort of what that center red, the redder is more, higher percentile, the bluer is just less. And we also did it for low birth weight rate percentile. So with that, those are kind of the resources we have for you right now. You also have us as a personal resource, and you have your understanding of your community as your other resource. So what we're going to do now, and we'll have Crystal sort of take it away from here, but you have an opportunity to take a look at all these maps, talk with your fellow residents or advocates or industry folks who kind of know the area really well, and think about where you want to place these resources. And again, your key is that worksheet, which is number 2, and that's really where we want you to mark 2, 5, 2, and 4, that's kind of what it says across the top, regions where you want those monitors placed. And when we're all done, or we think we've kind of sufficiently chatted it out, then we'll take an opportunity to go actually place our stickers up there. One final thing I want to let you know is there is a column on this worksheet for other. We recognize and appreciate that we don't have as many resources as we would like for this entire community. So there are a couple of things we can do there. Other can be your suggestions for, hey, in a couple of years, let's make this area the next priority. And you can place that on the map and we'll note it. Other can also be other types of pollutants you want monitored, and also place that on the map. We certainly want that feedback. Other can also be, okay, well, you placed the compact system at this school, and while a lot of the community submitted that as a suggestion, I don't think it's where I want the compact system. Write it down, place it on the map. So we're trying to be flexible. We definitely want everyone's feedback, and at the end of the night, we're hoping to make sure we at least know where the van is going to be focusing. The trailer is going to be placed, and another PM 2.5 monitor is going to be placed. Does that make sense? I know I talked a lot, so I'm going to stop talking.
Thanks, Jessica. Okay, when, just to jump in, the little stickies that are sitting at your table, do you mind holding them up? No, not the dots, the little ones. So this is what you put the other on. So on the map, you can write the other on your tiny sticky. The others on your worksheet, you can just write it out and note it. And again, does anyone not have a copy of the worksheet who wants to participate in our monitoring mapping game? Members of the public can get worksheets back there. Steering committee members should have it in front of them. You will have about 5-10 minutes, depending on how long this takes. But let's work through our worksheets, and we'll reconvene. John, you have a question.
Do the monitoring stations have to be in locations that are away from trees and other structures? And
we can. So what we're really wanting to do, so that'll be helpful if you have a specific location. But yes, we do try to make sure no matter where we place it, maybe we'll place it higher so it's not blocked by a tree or a building on multiple sides. But you can kind of leave that up to us. If you want it in a specific intersection, we will do our best to find where it can be sited properly within that intersection. So we definitely want to know where you want it monitored. If you have suggestions, that's great specifically, but you tell us where and we will try our best to make it work with siting requirements as well. I think the thing that we're most concerned about, we can try to make siting requirements happen. It's really hard to get power and security in a lot of these rural areas. So keep that in mind. Our trailer has a lot of intense equipment That's very, very expensive and requires a lot of power. So that's going to be really, really difficult if we're not in an area that has that capacity. So I think that's the biggest thing, and not necessarily the siting.
Any other questions before we get going? Okay, it is about 6 o'clock, a few minutes after. I'll check in about 5 minutes. Go.
Hello. Thank you guys so much. So if we could have everyone's attention really quickly here, we're going to just quickly summarize this exercise. We only have a little bit of time here, and we definitely obviously want to talk about the SERP. So if I can get everyone's attention really quickly. I just want to first thank you guys so much. I think this was, and I think we can all agree, a much different process than we've gone through so far for the air monitoring plan. A lot of people provided their input. I encourage you, if you do have those specific notes we asked for, please collect these. I see Gustavo doing it already, and turn these in, including members of the public. We definitely want to hear specific ideas. Some of these are in the urban location, but we still want to know where to place them in the urban location, and any help is definitely, we're very grateful for. And then especially some of those more rural locations, we certainly want to know where we might be able to plug things in, get secure locations. So we have a few folks that are just kind of marking theirs really quickly so they can identify their votes. But just as they step away, I just want to quickly kind of summarize the trends we see here just to make sure that we're all on the same page as sort of like a very visual consensus of where we want to place a lot of the monitoring. So maybe you guys can all stay there, but maybe after the end of the meeting, we can all get up and kind of go around again just to kind of see if those of you who didn't want to take pictures or take a look. But just quickly going through the regions, I'm going to start with A through D, which is that central location of Shafter. In a second, when we get folks that, again, they're just labeling theirs, so we're going to be patient. But it's really obvious, and those of you who were there kind of at the end, that A through D, that urban area, it was a lot of the focus for that trailer, which I think we all can appreciate. It has the most capabilities, and that's where the most people are and the most sensitive receptors are. Also where the most ability for us to place the trailer. So that's definitely a very clear consensus on our end. We will certainly go through and tally all of these. There's a lot of stickers, and it'll be part of the camp. We're also going to take the public input to make sure we have the full picture of what everyone's thinking. But once we do, you can clearly see from the colors, I think that A and B are very clear focuses for the trailer. For the van, it is very obvious, and we will certainly, this is definitely a commitment we will make and can make right now, certainly focus the van a lot on that Mexican colony area, the Cherokee Strip area. That whole region of F is clearly a very important area. But also all of the other locations here. We will focus it on I, it looks like, a little bit over in M. There's some discussion, or it looks like a little bit over in the N region, which is sort of that upper left-hand corner of Shafter. So everywhere where there's yellow right now, especially high concentrations, this will all be documented in the camp. Those will be areas where we will drive the van very regularly, park the van, perhaps for longer periods of time to get a more sort of like long-term understanding of those areas. I see a lot of you wrote specific things on the stickers, but again, those areas out in M and N, if you could write that on your sheet, that'll be helpful for us. So we're not just driving around out there, but it's specifically a specific location or receptor. I think a lot of you dairies are a lot of the feedback we're seeing. And so it's certainly something we can drive by and understand more. Moving on to blue, which is the PM2.5 monitoring. Right now we have one additional one we can place. It looks, again, sort of like it's in that urban area is a lot of where we're focusing. But there are some indications kind of up in that, I believe that's the corner of the Wasco area for some voters. But we'll certainly take a look at all this. But kind of looking at the concentrated areas down in that southern part of the urban region, we'll certainly take a look at areas where we can place that. Finally, I know DPR is really very grateful for this, understanding where we want that pesticide monitoring, as they've discussed. I heard a lot of talk about Maple School, which is that area over in N. A lot of talk about kind of the center northern region of town, down in Mexican Colony, and a little bit up in that sort of GH region, kind of where you can see that comes into Shafter on that northeastern corner. So again, we saw a lot of extra sticky notes that were just extra PM2.5 monitoring. That will all be tallied up when we finalize sort of the input for the camp. And we will certainly update you 100% where, and especially once we get specific locations where we are planning to place those monitors. So if everyone could give each other a round of applause, I just really appreciate it. I thought we did a really great job. I saw a lot of teamwork, and this is, I mean, I think one of the best visuals that's come out of this group. So thank you, and I will pass it to Crystal to help us move along.
Okay, thank you. And just to reiterate, these are recommendations that will be tallied with the individual sheet recommendations, the public member recommendations, and will all go in to inform the Air District staff, who will be the ultimate decision makers. Any questions about this process before we move on? No. Okay. We are a little behind time, so we're going to catch up. We're going to talk now about the ongoing SERP and changes that have been made that reflect the comments and letters that have been submitted by members of this group. So John's going to lead us in a short presentation that will go over. No, John's not. Sorry. See, I'm just getting this wrong. Jess is going to lead us in this presentation to talk about what has changed and where we are in the evolution of this. So sorry.
It's okay. No worries. Thanks, Crystal. I think we all expect it to be the John show tonight. So it's going to be a little less fun of a exercise than we just did, you guys, but I think we've got some exciting things to talk about with the evolution of our community emission reduction program. First of all, I wanted to start off by saying thank you to everyone that has submitted comments. So far, we've gotten numerous comment letters received in recent weeks from the steering committee, as well as the public, the city, the county, DPR, and all of those comments we are working to integrate into the SERP as possible. And we're working on an updated version of the SERP, which will be coming out here shortly. So I think we are getting close. There was that article in the news a couple of days ago that kind of had us really polarized. I feel like we're a lot closer than maybe that article gave us credit for. I think we have a really great document that does a lot of really good things for the city of Shafter. We have cost-effective use of incentives to fund zero and near zero emission cars, heavy-duty trucks, which are shown to be a really big impact in the city of Shafter. We're looking at funding low-dust harvesters. For the first time, we're able to provide incentives for stationary sources to install control technology above and beyond what's already required through really stringent regulatory requirements. We are able to fund some school filtration devices. We're looking at expanding. Brian will talk more about this later, but we're looking at expanding the funding for that school filtration pilot program in Shafter based on community inputs from kind of across the board from the committee, which is exciting. We have district regulatory efforts, including for the residential wood burning and for flares. We've got CARB coming to the table, DPR involved with regulatory measures for heavy-duty trucks and pesticides, local actions to reduce emissions in the community, including from that's from the cities and the counties. So we've got Kern County Public Works, Kern County Planning Department in conversation with the district. Really great kind of collaboration from everyone involved with the city of Shafter and the community. So then reaching out to the public, we've got some expanded outreach for the availability of funding. Our health schools program, our RAN, which is our real-time air advisory network. We've got enhanced enforcement to help support all of these measures detailed in our enforcement plan. So a lot of really great meaty measures included in this SERP. The draft SERP was developed to target emission reductions within the community, and it's been based on community concerns, emission inventory data, and the technical analysis that you heard Brian Clements and the CARB team talk about in earlier presentations. So we've really come a long way since we first started talking about this in April. Just a quick review of how we got here. So back in April, we presented some draft emission reduction strategy concepts. Those were reviewed and discussed with the committee. Then those were prioritized by the committee in those worksheets that we went over together. Those were then formulated into draft kind of initial set of measures, which were reviewed with the committee and also prioritized. And then those were formulated into that initial set of slides that we went over together and then received pretty significant comments back on. So after those comments were received, we went over all of those strategies and did some pretty significant revisions to reflect what we were hearing from the community. So these are a detailing of some of those revisions that we did back in August 5th. We increased the funding amounts for EVs based on comments about the lack of accessibility for funding for low-income residents. We committed to work with the California PUC and utilities to bring available state funding to Shafter for solar. We had a commitment to support the launch of a car share program like MioCar and Green Commuter here in Shafter and to subsidize the ridership for that. We had originally proposed to look at a transit bus program, but based on the community comments we heard, we revised that to specific for Shafter, create a program to replace two EVs for Dial-A-Ride. We also, kind of hearing back from the committee, we increased the funding for ag burn alternatives due to the specific concerns we heard from the committee. And then we had some specific goals for urban greening, specific outreach to different locations, and then a couple of different suggestions from committee members resulted in more flexible, we're looking into more flexible vehicle eligibility under Drive Clean in the San Joaquin. And we also heard that the Shafter community was really interested in free lawn care equipment. And so we are working to amend our program guidelines to allow that specifically in Shafter. So there's been a lot of really great progress. We kind of came from this draft sort of general statements, and now we have a kind of defined plan for Shafter that's unique to the community here. We've had a lot of great recommendations, a lot of dialogue about different measures, and some back and forth within the community and between the different agencies involved. So this presentation is going to review the latest updates based on our latest set of comments that we received after we published the draft cert. Before I hand it over to Brian Dodds, who's going to go over some of the changes to our proposed measures, I did want to go over our flexibility and funding amounts. We wanted to reiterate to the committee that while these are goals that are being set in the cert, ongoing implementation is going to allow for some of the, if there's additional funding or a lack of funding availability, we can change these through the implementation process to allow some flexibility between now and our five-year milestone report. So these aren't necessarily set in stone. As we hear from the committee and as we go out to the community and try to get these projects up and running, we're going to take your ongoing advice to direct this process. So we wanted to put that out there. Brian's going to be talking about this a little bit more as he goes through his different slides. And with that, I will hand it over to Brian.
Thank you, Jessica. So my name is Brian Dodds. I'm a program manager in our Grants and Incentives Department. I'm going to run through some slides this evening to talk about some of the changes that we've made to proposed measures based on a lot of the feedback we've received from committee members, other members of the public, and kind of what we're going to be proposing as a revised measure. So one of the big priorities for the committee that we've heard is having a residential solar program here in Shafter. We did not previously have this measure in, but we're proposing to include a measure totaling $15 million in state and district funding for a residential solar program here in Shafter. Contingent on successful advocacy for state funding, the district will consider providing $1.5 million as match towards a new state program totaling $15 million total to incentivize the installation of residential solar and home electrification here in the city. The funding proposal is contingent, of course, upon approval by CARB and commitment by CARB and the PUC to adopt new program guidelines that would provide the emission reduction benefits to the local funding that's provided here. In addition, we'll continue to work with the steering committee and other partners to advocate for new state funding to support the proposed measure. So we're including this in our CERP proposal. The test drive program that we provided or that we proposed, we received feedback that the money, the $200,000, was too much for kind of a trial program. What we heard was incorporate this type of measure, this type of program, into the vehicle replacement measure. And so we're doing that. We're putting that as part of Measure C2, which would be to replace gas-powered vehicles here in Shafter with electric models. And we're going to incorporate this program into that measure. In conjunction with that, one of the pieces of feedback that we received from committee members for our vehicle replacement program was to increase the incentive level to accommodate low-income residents that do not benefit from the federal tax credit. What we're suggesting as part of a revised measure would be to increase incentive amounts for low-income residents up to $2,500 in extra funding. It would be very difficult, if not impossible, for us to fully account for and predict who might be eligible for the federal tax credits. As sort of a practical implementation, we think maybe providing some additional incentives for low-income residents, which we can more easily document, would be a practical solution. And that would really be for purchases. It would be difficult to really account for that federal tax credit. For leases, typically those federal tax credits are provided at the time of the lease. The dealer takes credit and lowers the price that the leasor would be getting. And of course, what we want to do is make sure that people aren't making money off of these incentives, that they're not getting more than the value of the car, for instance. So we want to make sure in establishing this program that we have measures in place to ensure that not more than the full amount of the vehicle is provided through incentives. EV charging, and in addition to some of the other measures, having home charging available for electric vehicle users is extremely beneficial. We received feedback from committee members that there should be more funding on top of the money that is provided through PG&E rebates to support level 2 charging at residences. And so as part of a revised measure, we're proposing up to $20,000 be added for our vehicle replacement project to fund a pilot project to allow Shafter residents to install charging infrastructure at their residence and provide an additional $200 on top of the $800 that PG&E would provide to help offset any of the costs associated with installing home charging. The car sharing program that we proposed, we received feedback that maybe there wasn't enough funding within that measure to fully subsidize or to fully offset some of the costs associated with that. We're proposing to raise it from $250,000, which was in the first draft, up to $300,000. And based on our experience implementing similar programs, here we think that additional funding would be enough to adequately subsidize the cost of ongoing ridership. So changing that one from $250,000 to $300,000. In our heavy-duty truck replacement measure, we received some feedback that maybe the $6 million that we had proposed was too much, that maybe there weren't that many trucks here in the Shafter area that we could replace. So we're proposing to reduce that to $4 million with a target of replacing 40 trucks instead of the 60 that was originally proposed. Similarly, on our zero-emission yard trucks, or TRUs, we received feedback that maybe it was a little bit too ambitious for 4 million and 30 units and only incentivize a couple of units. We've dropped this measure down to 1.5 million with the goal of replacing 10 units that operate in and around Shafter. And to the local operations that were specifically mentioned within this measure, we'll do outreach, we'll meet with them, we'll provide them all the information necessary to see if it's something that they're willing to participate in and invest in replacing those trucks. Electric school buses, we had originally proposed $3.2 million. The feedback that we got was to bump that up and replace a few more buses. So we've increased our goal to replace 10 buses that operate in and around Shafter with targeted outreach to Maple School and Rio Bravo School, and increasing that measure to $4 million. So a couple extra buses within this measure. Dairy feed mix electrification, we received from some comments that potentially eliminating all the funding associated with this measure. We think there are some significant cost-effective emission reductions that would be achievable by replacing some of the diesel-powered equipment at dairy operations with electric pieces of equipment. However, what we're proposing on this one is to reduce the overall funding from $6.5 million to $3.9 million, with the goal of funding five projects within the Shafter area and replacing their diesel-powered equipment with electric models. Ag pump electrification, the comments we received were to include natural gas-powered engines as an eligible replacement category. We agree with that measure, with that proposal. Within our new measure, we'll include natural gas. Engines that are currently powered by natural gas will be eligible for electric replacements. Dairy truck replacements. We received feedback from committee members that they did not want to include measures to replace dairy trucks. We had originally allocated $2 million in funding. With the updated SERP, we're proposing to eliminate funding for dairy truck replacements. Similarly, with the dairy digester measure, some steering committee members expressed a lack of support for this measure, which was to work with CDFA in supporting the installation of dairy digesters to reduce air pollutants and methane emissions and generate renewable gas fuel. We're proposing at this point to eliminate that measure from SERP. Excuse me, urban greening. Committee members support the idea of including funding to support urban greening in addition to the proposed measures to work to direct existing state funding to Shafter to support urban greening. But what we'll commit to as part of this measure is to work directly with Shafter residents, community groups, and other partners to support advocacy and application efforts to seek state funding for urban greening, including in the state budget. Natural Resources Agency and Caltrans may have available funding for these types of projects. There's also a list of potential funding programs at californiagreenleaf.org. Commercial charbroiling. Our initial SERP suggested $300,000 with the goal of 1 to 2 replacement control devices installed at local restaurants. There were suggestions to reduce that funding amount. In our proposed SERP, we're going to revise that. We'll have a goal of 1 restaurant with $150,000 in funding allocated to this measure. And school filtration systems. We received comments that maybe this measure could have a little bit more funding associated with it. We agree. In our updated SERP, we'll increase funding to support the pilot program to install HVAC filtration system. With a MERV rating of 14, that's basically the efficiency of the filters. Based on programs in other regions, this is about $25,000 per school. So we're looking to increase the funding from $100,000 up to $250,000. And again, as Jessica mentioned, there's a lot of flexibility here as we implement the SERP. If we're finding measures that are working and there's a lot of demand for, and others that aren't working and really there's no demand for, you know, we'll focus efforts on the ones where we're getting a lot of interest and a lot of emission reductions associated with them. I'm going to turn it back to Jessica for some next steps, and then we'll tackle any questions you might have after that.
Thanks, Brian. Okay, everybody. So all of these measures, thanks, are going to be summarized on this spreadsheet that everyone should have. So this is a list of all the measures that we had previously published in this SERP. The measures that are proposed for changes, as we just discussed in this presentation, are marked in red. So there's a couple of measures that have been striked out, measures that have had adjustments to the unit count have had the original units struck out and then been replaced with the proposed amount. And then the funding changes have also been marked in red. So this is kind of your cheat sheet to the SERP for what we're working on right now. There is a couple of other kind of general updates to the SERP that you should be looking for in the next iteration. One is we're working on kind of reframing the community profile, including some other maps of Shafter, as well as some additional health data and census tract maps of that health data, which will be included in an appendix. So that's a change. We are also looking, so CARB received some specific suggestions about sites for enforcement inspections. That's something that would kind of fall under the table of ongoing implementation ideas. CARB's going to be accepting that comment taken into account, but we're also looking for specific suggestions from all steering committee members for kind of implementation for inspections going forward. So that'll be something as we move past the adoption of the SERP and we get into this implementation, which will probably be, you know, quarterly meetings or something like that, we'll be looking for suggestions from the steering committee at that time as well. So don't feel like this is your one shot to get all your thoughts to us. We'll be kind of doing that over this kind of five-year process, okay? So a couple of dates and deadlines. Today is the Monday, August 26th meeting. On Wednesday, I'll let Crystal talk about this a little bit more, but Wednesday is a public meeting to discuss both the South Central Fresno and the Shafter SERP to kind of bring the public that hasn't necessarily had a chance to be involved into this process so they kind of understand the AB 617 implementation process. This is also the date we've asked the steering committee and public to get comments on this first version of the SERP. So just to help us in kind of getting that next version of the SERP ready for your review. If you could get any significant comments to us on Wednesday, that'd be great, but we will be taking comments kind of throughout this process. And then Monday, September 9th is going to be our next community steering committee meeting. We will have a couple of updates from other agencies, and we'll also be getting ready for the governing board meeting. And then the final SERP will be published on Thursday, September 12th, with our governing board meeting on Thursday, September 19th. So those are kind of our main dates. I'm going to turn it over to Crystal.
Thanks, Jessica. Okay, before we go into questions, I just want to have Edgar do a really quick, briefly kind of recap of the changes to the pesticide strategies and sort of what he heard and what changed.
All right. Hello again. I don't have any slides, so I'm just going to kind of read through a few, four topics that I want to kind of update the steering committee in regards to pesticide-specific items. So one is monitoring. DPR is committing itself to continue the operation of the pesticide air monitoring network location that we currently have in Shafter. And this is past the CARB DPR two-year limited collaboration that it's ending soon. So again, DPR plans to keep that for a long-term basis. The expansion. As you guys participated in that exercise earlier today, and we provided the actual various possible options that are at your disposal, I do want to stress, though, before kind of ending the meeting today, is unlike CARB and the Air District, DPR did not receive any AB 617 funding. Therefore, we are committing ourselves, depending on the funding options that are made available, to either participate as a consultant or actually operate the additional expanded air monitoring sites that you want to have in your community. And this is all depending on the options that are available, the whatever you community select, as well as whatever funding is made available. Notification. So that's a topic that has been brought up multiple times, especially here in these meetings, is the request for a pesticide application notification system. While this is, again, I think about a month ago, I talked about the different possible issues with notification as kind of suggested. However, DPR is committing to explore options for a pesticide application notification system that may work for the Shafter area. We will work with our partners, the CARB, the Air Districts, the County Agricultural Commissioners, to see if we can identify any feasible options for the development and, more importantly, the implementation of a system in the Shafter area. Again, we have, so far, there's a few pilots out there, one in Monterey County, that is, it's a limited scope. Basically, that pilot is doing notification system for a few schools in the Pajaro Valley area, and they're doing it for a few fumigants within a quarter mile of the school. So we will talk to them to see how they implemented the system and see if that may work in the area as well as explore any possible new options that may be worth considering and bringing up to your attention. Again, this is depending on the funding and the cost. The scale or the scope of the notification system may need to be adjusted if any is identified. Emission reductions. DPR is committed to develop a regulation to reduce the exposures of 1,3-D in ambient air. We talked about this earlier. Basically, DPR is currently working on a regulation and will be made public in the coming months. And as part of this, this is part of the toxic air contaminant process where we have to follow a very specific legal process. So we're working with our partners as part of that TAC process, which is the Office of Environmental Human Health Hazards Assessment, so OEHA, the California Air Resources Board, the air districts, as well as the County Agricultural Commissioner's Office, as part of the process in to develop and mitigation procedures for 1,3-D. DPR will be working with the air district to see if we can get some space in this in these meetings in the fall to actually talk about the specific proposed mitigation procedures for 1,3-D. Lastly, additional. Basically, we DPR will work with local partners in the Shafter area to identify and promote use of alternative agricultural practices and see if we can expand on our IPM practices. DPR makes IPM grants available on a yearly basis. These are the Alliance grants, and we're gonna put extra emphasis to see if we can get something going in the Shafter area. These grants become available for submissions on January 2020. So again, in future meetings, we can talk a little more in detail about what grants are available and what the scope of that will be. Thank you.
Thanks, Edgar. Okay, before I go to general comments, I want everyone to stop and reflect upon the changes that we just heard Jessica and Brian and Edgar talk about. Go back. I know it was a lot of changes. How many of you, just quiet show of hands, saw a change that reflected a comment that you either verbally shared in a meeting or something you wrote down or some sort of something that was discussed? That change was in response to something that you said. Think back. I see some head nodding, some hand holding. Can you look around? Okay. How many of you are excited about the outcome of that change? I mean, excited might be overselling it. How many of you are pleasantly surprised at the outcome of that change? Yes. Okay, I'm just going to get a couple for instance. What was...
Cindy submitted comments about getting some additional information about the Shafter area added to the plan, and we appreciate that information getting added. It would be really helpful.
Thank you.
I saw some nodding over here. Are you willing to share? What was the change in regards to?
Oh, I don't know.
Anybody want to share a change?
I have a question.
Gus, you want to share a change? What changed?
The incentives for electric dairy feed mixers. That could change more. Like, you go to zero.
But there was a change in the direction that you wanted to see it change, is what I'm asking.
I think one of the major things is that a willingness to do the air monitoring for the pesticides and working with partners to do that. I think that at least from my perspective, I'd like to have some sort of calendar or schedule and how that might be executed, and so there's a good follow-up for that.
I see these notes being captured. Any other changes anyone wants to note? Say that was a good response to my suggestion. Tom, I saw your hand. We're moving on to questions.
Okay. On the pesticide notification, we asked for money to be allocated from 617 funding for that. So we still expect to see that so that you can't use lack of funding as an excuse. We think 617 specifically should be able to provide funding for that. Second, I want to see under cost effectiveness all the calculations in some kind of appendix, because you're not comparing apples to apples here as you go through this. So I want to see how you did the calculations. Is that possible on the cost effectiveness?
Can do to include that information within SERP.
Because I'll tell you some of the problems. Like, one of the low cost effective things is locomotives. We asked for locomotives to be removed, but you have one of the, you know, it's one of the highest cost effective measures you're claiming here. But I don't believe that 12,000 per ton refers to reductions in Shafter. It's more where that locomotive runs up and down the valley. That's my opinion right now, but I'd like to see how you did the calculation there to get that high effectiveness.
Okay.
And then another one, you got $1 million per ton for solar panels. Well, the point of solar panels is not just to reduce electricity from a power plant that's burning fossil fuels. It's to enable the residents to move into a future of electric homes and electric vehicles. So the solar panels allow you to electrify the home and get rid of that gas heater,
correct,
which is one of the biggest pollution sources.
We did take those additional emission reductions into account when coming up with the cost effectiveness number.
So I want to see the calculations, how you got that $1 million, because I believe it's a lot better than that.
Okay.
But I won't argue with you until I see your calculations.
Thank you.
Thanks, Tom. Okay, I want to go to someone who hasn't spoken yet before I go to the ones that have, and then we'll circle back. No one has shared at this table. I'm going to walk towards this table until someone shares. Who wants to share? Anybody? You can just be like, I am hungry and I want to go home.
Ditto.
I'm good.
You're good.
Yep.
Okay. Anyone from the public want to share any thoughts or reflections, questions, reactions to these changes we've seen today? I see a hand over here.
I'm not really from the public. My name is Sean Beeler. I'm a supervising planner for the Public Works Department, specifically for the engineering and environmental units. Our comment, in which we submitted on Friday to the district, hasn't been included yet. We know we were kind of last minute on this, but I did want to mention, for the general public's benefit and for the environmental justice groups and some of the other interested parties that have been contributing to the SERP process, that right now in the SERP there are no funds dedicated toward infrastructure projects. And we just wanted to let everybody know that's in attendance and moving through the process for the final SERP. I apologize, I'm a little nervous. It's been a while since I've done this. That we are fully committed to prioritizing the Shafter area and the Shafter community. And that means that if there are any infrastructure projects, whether it's Smith's Corner or Thomas Lane, or whether it's paving dirt roads to reduce PM2.5, PM10, our department is fully committed to utilize our resources in whatever manner it is, whether it's having funds set aside for future grant applications or having projects fully funded that are prioritized by the community. And if that means that it's paving a dirt road, adding shoulders to existing roads, or doing complete streets and adding drainage, we are looking to partner with the community to do that. And just to Tom's point, we were also going through this, and we realized there were a lot of the calculations that were missing. And we just wanted to point out to the group that for every 1 mile of unpaved road, a dirt road that's paved, it's approximately $1.5 million. What that translates into is approximately 184 tons of PM10 that's removed, and 28 tons of PM2.5 that's removed from the air. If you translate this into dollars and a cost per benefit ratio, it's one of the top two or three ways that you can spend your money. So we just wanted to introduce ourselves and let you know that we're here to participate and try to help whatever we can do with the community to make your lives better, whether it's adding curb, gutter, and sidewalk, or just reducing dust emissions.
Thank you for that. All right. I'm going to quickly recap the dates, and then we're going to go back to the three hands that I saw. So again, Wednesday, if you can send any initial or sort of next round comments on the draft SERP in by Wednesday, that would be fantastic. This public workshop is, correct me if I'm wrong, it's going to be in person in Fresno, but live cast in Bakersfield and Modesto. So you can participate in any of those three locations. It is not a formal steering committee meeting, so some of you will be overprepared. It is meant to really inform the public of where, like the general residents and public, about where this process has been and where it's going, and just sort of keep them in the loop. So you're welcome to come. It's not a formal steering committee meeting. That one will be September 9th, where we will review the updated SERP and get it sort of talk about what's going to go to the governing board meeting moving forward. So that proposed SERP is going to go on the 12th, and the district governing board meeting will be September 19th. So these are the really kind of near-term important dates to know. Any questions about that from a what's coming up process-wise? I see your hand. Okay.
The workshop Wednesday, is that, are there going to be public, is it going to be a public hearing? Is it going to be a case where, exactly what's going to happen at that workshop?
I can talk about that. So it's just an informative workshop. No decisions of any kind are going to be made. Just think about it for people that maybe have heard about AB 617 but don't really know what's happening. We're going to let them know that we had these two communities that were selected, kind of walk them through the process a little bit, talk about Shafter, talk about South Central Fresno, and then talk about the types of measures that were developed. We'll point them to where the draft SERPs are posted and be asking for comments at that time. So if steering committee members want to come and want to talk about their experience so far or any suggestions they have, they're absolutely welcome to. Similarly with the public, but it's strictly informational.
Okay. Any other questions or clarifications before we go to final comments? Question? Tom.
So this is already a revised SERP.
Yes.
Comments on this are due in 2 days.
So comments. So think about this as a preview of the next version. So this is what we're presenting tonight, is kind of, hey, this is what we're thinking about changing in our next revised SERP that we're going to be publishing either later this week or early next week for Shafter. Expect to see the changes we talked about tonight included in that updated version. So if you haven't gotten comments to us on this specific version and the measures we included in the published version that was published earlier this month, that's what we're looking for comments on. We will be taking comments. If you have comments on these revised measures, feel free to submit those at any time. I don't think we've set a specific deadline for when to get us comments.
So this is not the final revised version.
Right.
So once that's out, will there be a comment period?
We will still be taking comments up to the day of the governing board meeting, honestly.
But nothing in writing will change.
So this version, when we publish on the 12th, that's going to be the set, kind of set version that goes to the governing board meeting. So I would say September 9th is going to be the last day to get us comments on the revised SERP that we'll be sending out either later this week or early next week. Does that make sense?
So I'll try to make it quick, but two things that I didn't see in the SERP at all were, one was continuing in some format a subcommittee moving forward after this is implemented to make sure that there's metrics and traction that where we're like obtaining these reductions. And then two, any funding that is generated through 617 stay within the 7-mile radius. So those were two things that I didn't see. On the agricultural operations portion on A1, the electric dairy feed mixing equipment, From the $3.9 million, we're suggesting that $250,000 of that be allocated to developing the notification through the pesticide, and $1.5 million of that be allocated to the pesticide monitoring in these additions. And doing that is like, who is in consensus with me in those changes? So cool. Was that recorded? And then on the at the end of that, for the pesticide measure that's being developed by CARB and DPR, I think that from the 250,000 that could be reallocated from the dairy mixers, I think that could be jointly go to that. And the industrial sources, IS1 under the flares. In the past, numerous times we requested data inquiry information about the amount, the reported amount of gas that has been burnt in the flare, in the shafter flares in the 7 mile radius, and having an understanding what the background kind of burning currently is happening. Oops, disculpe. On the land use and urban sources, this little piece of paper was, I think, one of the first or second meetings that we had in the Mexican colony. And the priorities were barriers, monitors, notification, dust mitigation, dust control through installation of sidewalks and paved roads. So I think that goes to exactly what the county was talking about and how, you know, this could be used. In SD1, under energy storage, that's a great technology, but I think we should leave that for maybe at a later point. So allocating whatever monetary funds would go to that, to something else, leaving the seeking incentives for local businesses and homeowners of solar without the storage. On RD2, which is a road dust and paving sidewalks, I think we already affirmed the support of that. Under exposure reduction measures, under the increased urban greening and forestry, I think that's an amazing plan, and I think it should be like on a voluntary basis. And for those folks, like say there's 1,500, you know, folks volunteer, the other 500 should be, there should be some kind of mechanism where the city could sustain those long term. On the statewide strategies, I think that was it.
Thank you. Okay, that was a lot. So if I could ask you to just make sure that all those were captured and, yeah, and turn in all your notes. So if you didn't turn in your worksheet earlier, please make sure you do. If you want to leave us with any final thoughts or suggestions, please do that as well. We are coming up on the end of this meeting. Any final thoughts from anyone? I see that finger.
It looks like that there's about $38, $40 million going to get spent here. And the one thing I'd like to know is, you know, who's going to administer it? I mean, executing all of these programs is going to take a lot of work. And does the cost of administering it come out of that, or is there administration money on top of that? And, I mean, we haven't really – and I don't want to get too far ahead, but at the same time – at least my experience has been with such an ambitious program, there has to be a lot of thought put into how you help people get the things that are being proposed. So
what I will say is the steering committee does continue in the implementation phase, just in a less frequent duration. I'm wondering if there's anyone from the Air District or CARB who wants to try to answer that question about money.
About the admin. So the district is going to be administering the grant programs that are associated with the SERP, and we have administrative funds that are associated with 617 to help cover those costs on top of the measures that are, you know, being proposed here.
Okay. Awesome. I see one final question, final, and then we will close.
So obviously appreciate the district staff and, you know, everyone that you've called on board to this process, really appreciate it. Learned a lot, but seeing a lot of familiar faces, I think we are all seeing the same people every time, even the same people making comments. So I'm curious, what is the process you're going to be going through to, one, share this information with Shafter as a whole? So how are you communicating with the city as a whole? And how are you giving them adequate time to give feedback to this process?
So that's an excellent question. Partly it's being answered by the workshop on Wednesday. That's an informative meeting that's meant for a wider swath of people.
Whoa.
Yeah, that would have been bad.
We
but
have
there's
ARB.
I got it. Hi, Heather Hines for the Outreach and Communications team. As you know, in the planning and some of these meetings, our discussions, we're not going anywhere. We're going to be in Shafter, talking to the residents, talking to the community and the bodies of people that live here for the indefinite future. And we've got a lot of work on our plate, and we recognize that, and we're excited to do it. And you can count on getting that information into the hands of the people that need it the most.
And this is Karen Maliano from CARB. Just to add to that, even once the plan has gone to the district board, there's a process where we take it to our board as well. We're planning on coming back down and hopefully co-hosting a steering committee with the district, specifically to help inform what do you want to tell our board about the process. And then our board will actually be coming down to Shafter in February to have a local board hearing for both this community and the Fresno community. And then just the last point to add to what Heather was saying is that we actually do have specific requirements that as this moves into implementation, that the steering committee does continue to be a core part of tracking and implementing the program.
And then just to add on to that, we do have some specific outreach strategies that are detailed in the SERP. So things like billboards, social media, advertisements on radio and TV, really things that are targeted to get out in the community and reach the public that hasn't been a part of this process. Those are really key. And those are detailed if you look in the SERP. It's Outreach Strategy 1 and 2. So those kind of review the specific strategies, workshops, being at community events, going to schools. Those types of strategies are really where that community outreach happens. And certainly that's a huge part of what the steering committee is going to be for. And you as the public or the steering committee, as you have suggestions for where we can increase community engagement, we really would love to hear from you living in Shafter how to best do that.
Okay, thanks everyone. That's a fantastic place to end this meeting. This is not the end. This is just the beginning of the next beginning of the next phase. So there is leftover food that I welcome anybody to take home if you are interested. Thank you so much for coming tonight, and we will see you on September 9th.